From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Tomorrow is Election Day, newsflash. We're going to hear from a group of first-time voters, and we're going to explore the psychology of winning and losing. And we would love to hear from you. Do you remember your first time voting? What made you want to do it? Or is this your first election, too? Tell us why you are casting a ballot. You can call us. We're at 404-500-9457 or post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on Twitter at OST Talk, and we might feature your comments on the show. We spent some time earlier in the program breaking down the proposed state constitutional amendments on the ballot, among them Marcy's Law. This was named for Marcy Nicholas, a California woman who was killed by her ex-boyfriend back in 1983. Georgia now ranks in the top states for deaths from domestic violence, and over the past decade, an average of 126 Georgians are killed each year due to domestic violence. Last year, that number increased by 23 deaths, and that's according to the Georgia Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Sheena Morris is Policy and Community Engagement Director for the Coalition, and she's with us in the studio. Good morning, Sheena.
Good morning.
LaVon Morris-Grant is also with us. She's founding executive director of Makash Healing Network, and she's also an author. And LaVon, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Sheena, how is domestic violence defined under Georgia law?
So in Georgia, domestic violence is defined in the context of family violence here in Georgia. And so there are relationship qualifiers within that context. So an occurrence that has happened between two spouses, two people that share or have a child in common, also a step-parent, stepchild. There are a number of relationship qualifiers of how domestic violence is defined in Georgia. What it excludes is dating partners. And so sometimes organizations such as the Georgia Coalition Against Domestic Violence really look at violence, domestic violence, in that broader context of dating violence, partners who may not have a child in common, who may not be spouses, but were certainly in an intimate partner relationship.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe cohabitating.
Right,
awesome.
Right.
So how do advocacy organizations like yours and the one that LaVon works with, how do they define it differently than legal boundaries? You mentioned one of them, but is there more to that?
Right. So as I mentioned, looking at dating partners, looking broadly at the dynamics of violence that are occurring, again, looking at violence in that intimate partner context is how organizations such as GCADV really focuses in on domestic violence.
But how about things like, emotional abuse? You don't call the police
right.
for emotional abuse
right.
or, because somebody won't let you get out of the house.
Mm-hmm. So also looking at it much broadly than just the physical violence that is occurring, right? So looking at economic violence that may be occurring, looking at psychological abuse that is perpetrated by a person using faith against a person who is being victimized, looking at that much broader context.
How about for you, LaVon? Is that something you and your organization, people don't necessarily think, oh, this is domestic abuse, right?
Right. That is so true. And just piggybacking off what Sheena was saying with the emotional and the psychological, the difference with that of how our programs view it, it is domestic violence. The difference is it's just not criminal.
Mm-hmm.
The physical piece of the criminal form or the physical form of domestic violence is the only piece you can report as a crime.
Right.
And even that, sometimes they don't hold the perpetrator accountable to that. The emotional, the psychological, the mental, financial abuse are tactics of what an abuser will use on top of being physical. And so we help educate women in society to understand the different forms and how they play out in the lives of victims.
Right. So what, Sheena, would you say, as a coalition that put together these numbers, contributed to the increase in domestic violence-related deaths in 2017?
Well, what you're referencing comes directly from the Georgia Domestic Violence Fatality Review Report. And what occurred during that reporting period was there were a number of familicides that actually occurred. So domestic violence that was perpetrated directly against a victim, but also other people being victimized in that situation, such as neighbors, children. These people were also a part of the violence that was captured in that report.
So it's systemic in some way.
So it's a larger public safety issue overall, because you can see that there is an impact that reaches beyond just the direct victim, but there are also other individuals who may be a part of that person's life or community that are also impacted by the violence.
Domestic violence, of course, not just a woman's issue. Men can also be victims, but 85% of victims are women. This is the U.S. Bureau of Justice figures. The risk of domestic violence, however, is even higher for African-American women. Why is that?
So there are a number of factors that go into, the risk being greater. There are systemic issues. There are cultural dynamics that may keep people from reporting. In Georgia, the African-American population makes up about 30%. However, Black and African-American women are dying due to domestic violence at a rate that is twice that of the population. And so, again, looking at those things that are systemic, such as cultural loyalty and how that impacts one's desire to report if they are being victimized. Looking at labeling and stigma that is associated with the issue of domestic violence, taking into context historical trauma of the community. So thinking about things like that when we look at it.
The desire to report, and also why did she stay? Why didn't she leave him? LaVon, we know this is often a line of questioning that people ask and pass judgments on. What is wrong with that line of questioning?
The big problem with that question, first of all, it's a very blaming question when you ask her, why doesn't she just leave? And one of the things we've learned at my organization, at Makash Healing Network, over the years, is we put the question back to those asking by saying, why does he abuse her? Let's ask the question that holds the perpetrator accountable, and let's put the onus back where it belongs, or the responsibility of the violence back where it belongs, opposed to asking the victim to pathologizing the victim to figure out what his line of thought is and why he's behaving that way. And then the other part of the question that makes it difficult, if she leaves, where is she going? Because people have this grandiose thought, or this, they want to think it's a pie in the sky that once she leaves, that everything is great. When we know over 75% of women who leave are in more danger. And many women are being killed.
It's staggering to consider those, and there are a lot of factors contributing, but I want to pick up on what Sheena said. How do you think being a woman of color further complicates those decisions, like the decision to leave?
So speaking from being a Black woman and being a Black woman who was abused, for me and so many of women that I've worked with who are women of color, the big piece for a lot of us is the cultural piece, and with the distrust of the police, and not just the police, but the big distrust of the whole criminal justice system, just how it treats our community in general, not per se one particular incident, but just in general of how racism plays out in our community and the way we see it. Not from the way people see it from the outside, but from the way we see it and feeling like we don't have a voice to speak to those systems to say, hey, this is the way you can work with us. And these are the reasons why we feel the way we feel, opposed to just shutting it down and being defensive and not hearing the point of view of how we see. If I report my intimate partner on abusing me, that you then won't kill him next, because that's not what I'm looking for you to do.
Right. Or he enters into the criminal justice system, and we know there's a lot of disparity in how men of color are treated, certainly. That's LaVon Morris-Grant. She and Sheena Morris are with us. We're talking about domestic violence in Georgia, and our state ranks in the top 15 in the nation for domestic violence-related deaths. But LaVon, I want to pick up on that. If you feel comfortable talking about it, you're somebody who helps healing and advocating for survivors of domestic violence, which you are yourself. Can you speak about that? Did you know at the beginning you were experiencing domestic violence?
So, no, to your answer first, I did not know. And people need to know, most women do not know. I don't care how educated you are. It's not about the education. But for me, it was emotional and verbal. And back then, we weren't even focused on emotional and verbal, and I wasn't even connected to the work back then. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea of language, that domestic violence was a language, that verbal abuse was a issue, that what my husband and I was experiencing, that was something that there was, it was just arguments to me.
So what crosses the line of verbal abuse for you?
So verbal abuse that I was receiving, and that a lot of other women, you know, calling me out of my name, just constantly putting me down, undermining, you know, me as a person, as your wife, you know, or, you know, whatever those pieces look like. So when you're going, we're constantly going back and forth. And so even when the advocates told me I was an abused woman, I could not understand how was I abused when he never hit me, because back then we just thought abuse was about physical.
Right.
And growing up, I just thought you could call me all the names you want, as long as you don't hit me, I'm okay. But threats, calling you out of your name, spitting on you, all those things are forms of abuse. So when my husband then shoots me 4 times, 10 months later, that is shocking for us, for me, the community, his family, everyone. And then when the community and church blames me for his behavior of shooting me 4 times and then shooting himself and dying 2 days later.
Oh, that's a horrible story. And according to the Georgia Domestic Violence Fatality Review Project, firearms were the cause of 70% of those deaths. You clearly survived, thank goodness. But what does Georgia law say about domestic violence and firearms, Sheena?
So currently there is no existing legislation on the Georgia books pertaining to firearms. There is federal legislation which codifies that those who have been convicted of a misdemeanor act of domestic violence cannot possess ammunition or a firearm. However, that law is not codified in Georgia's books.
Well, just a few days ago, a man twice charged with battery against a woman walked into a Tallahassee yoga studio and opened fire. Online, history of racist and misogynist social media posts for him. And what do we know about the perpetrators of mass shootings and the history of domestic violence?
So we very often do know that those who have been involved in mass shooting cases do have a history of domestic violence. There have been several cases in various different states where those individuals were not supposed to be in possession of a firearm and had indeed been convicted of some type of family violence.
Yeah, I'm seeing as much as 54%, according to Congressional Research, mass shooters and connected to domestic violence. So obviously there are a lot of warning signs here for beyond just inside of a woman's safety. Anything that you are advocating from your organizational point of view for the courts, for the law to change, to keep in mind?
Absolutely. Well, we are currently and have for the past 2 years now been advocating for the codification of the federal statute so that it is clear in Georgia statute that, you know, those who have been convicted of an act of family violence or who are subject to a temporary protective order are unable to possess that firearm or any ammunition associated with it. So we are working very hard to implement and to get into law that statute here.
Well, so obviously that's when it gets to an extreme degree. But now here in Georgia, we have, you know, during Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October, everyone wears pink. You know, it's also Domestic Violence Awareness Month in October. People, you don't see them wearing purple for domestic violence awareness. What do you think, LaVon? What kind of stigma surrounds domestic violence? You talked about, you know, how your church didn't support you. What keeps people from supporting and even talking about it?
So when you do the comparison of supporting Breast Cancer Awareness Month with the same month that domestic violence is in, and actually they asked us, could they share that month with us? And we said yes. And they have blown up to where they have. You have to look at when, as a woman or a person, you get a disease, something happened to you that was outside of your control. Mm. Whereas with domestic violence, society looks at it from a blaming angle that she could have done something. She could do this. She could have taken steps. She could have left. She could have called the police. She could have cooked his dinner better. She could have been more submissive. So it's always what she could have done to prevent this the abuse that is happening to her, opposed to a cancer being a disease that you did not ask for and it was outside of your control. So that's the way we look at those two issues, with the shame and embarrassment that is attached to the stigma.
Right. And you were able to get beyond it. You didn't even know, if you continue that metaphor, that you had cancer, you know, initially. What brought you, what made you take that step forward?
So for me, one, I think for me, it worked out really well in my favor, which I'm so thankful to be alive today, because I still live with a bullet in my head and one in my foot. And my three children witnessed the shooting. Ugh. And we did extensive therapy. And my trust and faith in God, regardless of the church, I still remained it steadfast in my faith in God, because the church is not, God is not the church. And so my relationship to that, and the idea as a mom that three people are dependent on me, three people who had nothing to do with what their dad and I did, really forced me to change a lot of my cultural behaviors and move outside the box and bring in more healthy reasons or more healthy living for my children and I, from an emotional and mental standpoint, so that those three people would have a better chance at their lives. And me breaking that cycle of the thought process of how you respond to issues, and also breaking the cycle of you don't have to abuse anyone in your space because you don't like the way they interact with you.
Well, Levon, thank you so much for telling your story. So glad you lived to see the day. Thank you. And also Sheena Morris, she's Policy and Community Engagement Director at the Georgia Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
If you or someone you know needs help, or if you think you're questioning whether you're a victim or of domestic violence, you can connect with an advocate and other services calling the 24-hour statewide domestic violence hotline. That's at 1-800-334-2255. Thanks so much for being with us today. We will be back, of course, for Election Day here on Second Thought.